Glad to have you along here on the Ideas Network as we turn our attention to antiques, appraisals, and auctions. Shirley Bauman has been with us a number of times. She's an auctioneer and a certified appraiser. You may have a question about antiques or about appraisals or how do you put an auction together. Any of those areas are really fine with Shirley to talk about. So give us a call. The number 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison. Reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Shirley, welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here.
How's business? Are you been busy?
Oh, I tell you, this last 6 weeks has felt like a whirlwind to me. I've been doing a lot. You know, we had a tough winter here, so a lot of people put off things through the winter. So, you know, it catches up. But one of the really fun things I did is went up to Marquette, Michigan for a few days. The big library up there hosted me, and they had an appraisal fair at the library, and then they scheduled several days of private appraisal appointments for me, and we found some pretty interesting things up there.
Oh, did you? Anything you can talk about?
Yeah. Ooh. I can tell you about it. I was just doing some research this morning, and this just gives you an idea of where my research takes me sometimes. Captain David McClintock was a naval captain from Marquette. And a party up there has a lot of memorabilia of Captain McClintock. He was a junior officer on the USS Arizona, which, of course, was the ship that went down in the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
And he was one that survived that. And he later went on to be the captain of a submarine that found a Japanese fleet and destroyed and disabled many of the ships there. So he was a naval hero. And after that ship, actually the Darter was the ship he was on then. And that one got hung up on a shoal, and he later captained a ship that was made in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. So the party has a lot of memorabilia, including a card that the survivors from the Arizona were allowed to send home. It was a postcard, and they weren't allowed to write on it, but what they had to do was cross out everything that didn't pertain to them. So what was left on Captain McClintock's card, at that time he wasn't a captain but a junior officer, what was left on his card is, "I am well. I haven't heard from you lately." And things that got crossed out were things, "I was wounded. I am in the hospital," and such. So that's all those people were allowed to send home in the 1940s after the USS Arizona. And, of course, they could sign their name to it.
Oh, well, does something like that have value to another person?
It does. You know, there are a lot of military collectors, and I haven't completed my research, so I can't tell you how much this collection is worth. But there were things in there, of course, that was the Christmas card of the junior officers from the Arizona, a mess hall menu, many of those kinds of things, his ID card that allowed him to be on the Arizona. So military collectors really, really go for things like that because, you know, very few of those things survived.
Yeah.
And, of course, the war that's most collected is the Civil War, but all of the wars, especially the World Wars and such, have collector value.
Well, I'm not really a collector of Civil War memorabilia, although I have a shot, you know, and I have a few things like that, but and some Confederate money, and I don't know how many books, probably 50, maybe.
That sounds like a collection to me. You know, we say three or more, then you've got a collection. So.
Well, other people may have some questions for you, so I'm going to give that number again, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and with your comments. Somebody was on. We just lost a person who had a question about being an auctioneer and the lingo, and how do you learn that?
Well, I tell you how you learn it. Most people learn it by going to auction school. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of them in the Midwest and around the country. I attended the Missouri Auction School, and that's been around, I think, when I went in 02, they said it was the 105th year. So it's been around for a long time. And what they do for us as students is, first thing is they teach us tongue twisters. We learn about Betty Botter Butts and Butter, and you get tongue twisters. And then you start counting numbers, and you do drills every day, backwards and forwards, up and down, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, and then back down, 95, 90, 85, 80, until those numbers just come out of off naturally. So we do tongue twisters, we do that. And then we get a lot of coaching in the bidding. And the first way they teach us to call a bid at Missouri Auction School was, I've got a $1 bid, now two, will you give me two? And when you first do that, you can't remember that three is supposed to come next. But on our, I think it was our third night there, they had us out calling bids in the local community.
Oh, great.
But about 45 minutes, first thing in the morning, before we learned about the business, we had to do our drills. Tongue twisters and counting.
So auctioneer school is a great auctioneer place. School. That's the way to learn.
Yes, there are some in Minnesota, Ohio, the whole Midwest.
Excuse me. Let's go to Laura in Porterfield. Hi, Laura.
Hi, how are you today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
But my question is this. I live in Porterfield, but our main town is Marinette, Wisconsin. How do you find an appraiser, and then how much about does one charge to appraise it, per hour or...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Good question. The way one goes about finding an appraiser first is to look at the, I would suggest you look at the websites of the accreditation associations. I happen to belong to the International Society of Appraisers, and that's isa-appraisers.org. And the American Association of Appraisers has a website, and the ASA, American Society of Appraisers. The other one is the Appraisal Association of America. I got that mixed up. They all do. And they have a section on there that says find an appraiser. And so you can search by your state and or your specialty. If you've got something very specialized, like I was just talking about military items, you can look by specialty. So that's the way to find an appraiser. As far as fees, appraisers charge differently. Most of them that I know of charge hourly, and the fees range. But for the most part, I think for a professional appraisal, you're looking in the $100 to $150 an hour range. Some appraisers charge a flat fee for a job. They come and look at the job and say, I can do it for such a price. Do not hire somebody who says, I will give you a percentage of the total value of your appraisal. that you go ahead.
No.
Oh, no, I was laughing.
Yeah, that used to be the way people did it. And you can see that's fraught with the possibility of, well, I'll just make their items. I'll push them up a little bit so I get a little better fee. Not a good way to do it.
Can you bring more than one item to the appraiser then at that time? Do they charge per item or per hour?
Usually per hour. And okay. I go to a lot of people's homes, and a lot of times I do the entire household. Let's say there's an estate and they need to value it for estate taxes. I'll do all the entire household. And I do take appointments where people bring, you know, one or a few items to me as well.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I have a tapestry that's, I don't even know how old. I probably had it for 50 years myself. And it's like a bedspread tapestry. There's a fringe all around it. And it's gold threads. It's very beautiful. And I was just wondering where I could go to get that appraised.
Well, like I said, go to those appraisal organizations, or if you get down to Madison, yeah, I can certainly take a look at it.
Sure.
All righty. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, at 800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. You know, when it comes to appraisals, and, you know, I like to watch Antiques Roadshow as an example, and when they give an appraisal there, that is typically for insurance purposes, is it not? And that's a little different from what you might get for a particular item.
Right. They will say that a lot. You'll hear them say, for insurance purposes, and the reason they do that is especially when people are saying, oh, this is in my family and I'd never sell it. So they would want it insured. And that means that cost is what it would cost that individual to replace that item. A fair market value is what one might be thinking they might get for it if it were to exchange hands between a willing buyer and a willing seller. And there's a legal definition for that. There's also a liquidation value. Sometimes we're called in bankruptcies, and the bank says, well, how much can we get for it if we liquidate it next week? And that's going to be a lot less than if we can take the time to do a well-advertised auction and sell it that way. So there's different values, and that's one of the things that you want to ask your and talk with your appraiser about is what kind of value. And if they don't ask you what kind of value you need for them, that appraiser's not doing their job.
Ben in Madison, you are up next. Hi, Ben.
Hi, good afternoon. So yeah, I had a question similar to the last caller. I had come into a concert booklet signed by Johnny Cash and all three members of the Tennessee Three, and I was just sort of curious what the value is, and I fear that if I was to get the services of an appraiser at $100 an hour, I would find out that, you know, I might have paid out
$100
for something that's worth $7. So I didn't know if your speaker happened to know anything in regards to autographs and, you know, if it's even worth my time, because I've tried to exhaust all other options through researching online, but I unfortunately just can't find very much information.
Yes, and you bring up a good point. There are people who sometimes bring things to me that, you know, really don't warrant the time and money to invest in the appraisal. And I do usually tell them that because, frankly, I'm busy enough and I don't need to do that to them. And an appraiser really only has their reputation. So I wouldn't do that with someone. Now, as far as your booklet or program, a few years back, and I want to say about 4-5 years back, Sotheby's sold the Johnny Cash estate. And Lee Dunbar, Lila Dunbar, that she goes by Lee, but professionally you'll hear her and you see her on the Antiques Roadshow. Her name is Lila Dunbar. And she is the vice president for collectibles at Sotheby's. And she headed up the sale of that estate. So if you haven't done any looking on Sotheby's website, that'd be the place to look, because they would have information about Johnny Cash signed items. I don't know it off the top of the head, but that's where I'd look.
And you think that they would have some archives to take a look at what?
Yes, they do have archives there. It's a really good website. It might take you a little while to get used to searching on it, but that's what you want to do. You want to look for autographs. For a specific person, and I know they sold that estate.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right.
Welcome.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Shirley Bauman, our guest, as we talk with her about antiques, appraisals, and auctions here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Having some fun talking about auctions, appraisals, and antiques with Shirley Bauman, auctioneer and certified appraiser. She works out of Madison. Happy to have her along. Larry Mueller here. And thanks for listening in, by the way. If you have a question for Shirley, join in at 800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. This is fun. Kevin in La Crosse has a question for you, Shirley. So let's go to Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a full set of Depression glass. I'm pretty sure it's a serving of 8. It's a pink American sweetheart. And the problem I'm having is I've been digging around on the internet and trying to get appraisals and things like that, but all I'm finding is piece prices just for individual pieces. So I was just wondering if you had any suggestions of what I should do.
Well, you know what? When you take a set like that, and many times valuing it by the piece and adding it up totals more than if you give it a set price for the entire set.
Yep, I understand that.
I know that sounds counterintuitive, but a lot of times people will purchase it that way, and if you were going to insure it, that's what you would want to do, because if you broke one piece, you would replace one piece.
Yep.
Is your purpose for this, you're looking for a resale price, or?
Yeah, basically, yeah. I inherited this from my mother years ago, and the thing of it is it's just such a gorgeous set. I have no place to put it. It needs to be displayed, basically.
Right.
What I think, you know. So I'm just not sure that I can give it the respect it deserves, you know. So I'm just kind of looking to see what kind of value it has and put it up for bid, I guess.
Yeah, and that's what you do. And when items go up for bid at auction, you never really know exactly what they're going to bring. You can look at other auction results, and that's what I would encourage you to do. Try and find auction results on the internet, or, you know, talk to local auctioneers and get their opinion if they've sold something like this recently and what it's going for. Now, in general, I want to tell everybody to remember that economic conditions are not real favorable right now, and that affects the auction market as well.
Yep.
what you were getting and what we were getting for things, you know, a few years back is not what we're getting for things right now. People are more reluctant to part with their discretionary income because they don't know how much of it's going to have to go in their gas tank and the like.
Yeah.
So, you know, you might just want to hold on to it for a little bit better economic times, too, if part of your goal is to get a reasonable return for it.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much for calling, Kevin. Appreciate it. So where would you look online to find out about auctions that might have dealt with this, Shirley?
Well, like I said, a lot of the big auction houses have archives.
Okay, so Sotheby's maybe?
Sotheby's and Christie's and all of those do have them. I also, as an appraiser, I subscribe to databases of auction results. Now, the general average person who has one or two things they want to look up is probably not going to do that because of the cost involved.
Sure.
But that's where I find a lot of the information that I look for in terms of auction results.
Got it. Let's go to Hazel in Winter, Wisconsin. Hi, Hazel.
Hi. I have a question for you. I have two signed numbered prints that I found in an old shed about 30-some years ago. And, you know, I absolutely cannot figure out what the signature is because the person who signed them, the signature is so scribbly that I can't even make out any of the letters. And so I would like to know, where can I go to find out some more information about signatures? Is there a book or someone that I could go to that can read signatures better than I can on these two prints?
Well, the first thing I do when I see a signature like that is I try to magnify it as much as possible.
Uh-huh.
You put it under magnification and see if that doesn't help a little bit. Sometimes when you really see it enlarged, you can get a better idea. And then if you get the first letter, the first couple letters, maybe the first letter or the last letter, you can start Googling that and come up with something close.
Okay.
The other thing, there is a book that shows signatures.
Oh, there is. Okay.
And try and tell you what you're looking for. I don't know. But I do spend some time down in the Kohler Art Library at the university looking through books like that.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So you could do that.
The Kohler Art Library?
Right. It's in the Chazen Museum.
Okay.
It's in the lower level.
Uh-huh.
And they have reference staff there that could help you find books like that.
Okay. That isn't a book that an ordinary library would probably have on hand.
No, uh-huh. No, it isn't.
Okay.
I don't know if they could get something like that for you. You can check with your reference librarian and see if they can get something
order
like that.
Order one
from
or something,
you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right, okay. All right, well, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Sure. Bye-bye.
And let's see. We will go to Chris, I believe, in Milwaukee is next. Chris, hello.
Hi, thank you for having me on the program.
Sure.
I have a question. About 10, 12 years ago, I was in the Menominee River, and I found a fossilized trilobite. Not the impression of it, but the actual trilobite itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if this type of fossil is any worth, or if it should just be donated to a museum for the benefit of all, you know.
Well, that's a decision that you would have to make yourself if you were going to donate it or keep it.
Okay.
And
there are resources to look to find out the value of them.
Okay. Fossils, if I have something like that, I start to talk to archaeologists.
Mm-hmm.
They're the people who can really identify and authenticate those. And then after it's identified and authenticated, then we can work at valuing something like that. But that's the process that has to be done first.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Nomi in Richland, Illinois, I believe, is up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes.
What can we do for you?
I'm in Richmond, Illinois. I have two pinbacks with Lincoln portraits. They've been authenticated, but no one has been able to give me an appraised value wherever I've gone. One has a gold-toned braid around it, and the other one has a black filigree around it. And there's some dates on the back from the late 1890s, and the pin is by Whitehead and Hoag Company out of Newark.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Who authenticated it for you?
I can't remember the names right offhand. I'm sorry, I don't have them.
An individual, or did you get it done at a museum, or?
Oh, no, not in a museum. No, but this was several different people, and they said that they're real, but they have no idea what the value on them would be.
Well, I can't tell you that without looking at them either.
Yeah,
it's something that really would need to be looked at. And if you go to one of those websites and find one of the accredited or certified appraisers that belong to some of those associations that I mentioned, you will be able to. They will be able to get a value for them. The thing about the professional organizations that's really helpful is that we can consult with each other. So if I were to take a look at it, and political memorabilia is not my specialty, I could find one of my other members in the organization and talk to that person about what we have, and we can consult together and come up with information. So we have the whole group of people that we can draw on for that kind of expertise. So that's what I would recommend, that you look for one of those certified or accredited appraisers.
Okay, and where would I look again? I'm sorry, I wasn't able to listen.
Okay, isa-appraisers.org.
isa-appraisers.org. Uh-huh.
That's the International Society of Appraisers, and that's the association I belong to, and they have a tab on there called Find an Appraiser, and you can do that. The Appraiser Society of America, Appraisal Society of America, has a website that you could look on, and the American Appraisal Association also. And find, you know, accredited or certified appraisers through those professional organizations.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. When it comes to something being legitimate, I don't know, legitimate isn't the proper word, but I know that there are the Frederick Remington sculptures, for example, are among the most faked objects in the world.
Well, you're right. They are not only faked. There are authorized reproductions from the original molds for the castings. So there's different iterations of them as well. So what we're talking about is authenticating things. And a lot of the museums will be able to authenticate things. They, of course, will not give values because they consider that a conflict of interest because they are also buying these things for their collections. But they can often help to authenticate things. Or real appraisal experts. Like, I couldn't authenticate a Remington myself, but I have colleagues that I can call on in my professional association to help do that.
On to Dennis in Sparta. It's your turn now, Dennis. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello. My question today is, what is your opinion on the 10% buyer's fee? And generally, sometimes the seller has to pay 20%, and then they charge a 10% buyer's fee at small auction houses. A few of these have started up in Wisconsin, and there's some really negatives.
Yeah, all right. Well, do you want to explain that for us, Shirley?
Sure. What that is when someone goes to an auction as a bidder, the auction company or auction house will charge an additional 10% on what they've bid. So if they bid $110, they would be, when they go to check it out, they'll pay that extra 10%.
Yeah.
110. And the reason people do that is to try and spread out some of the costs of an auction. If a family is selling their estate, for example, or, you know, one party of the estate has gone into the nursing home and you know, the spouse has passed away and they need to sell that for their care, they try to spread out the costs. And costs for auctions and for everything has just increased. And so what it does is it allows more families to be able to sell through auction by spreading out some of that cost. And, you know, the costs include advertising, which has gone up so much, insurance for, you know, when you have people on your property, that you need to have insurance on those kinds of things and against breakage and damage and liability. There's the cost of labor. An auction has a lot of labor involved in it, And people don't even know some of the, you know, they don't see it. They see the day of, but there's so much that goes into the preparation of the auction, hauling all that equipment in, you know, the vehicles and all of those kinds of things. So the fees that the auction company has to charge to make this all work continue to increase. And so that 10% helps spread out some of those costs so that it all isn't on the back of the sellers. Large auction houses now are charging 25% fees, the big auction houses out east. And you will see the small auction companies following.
All right. So there you have it, Dennis. Thanks for calling. It's good to bring that up. Harriet in Richland Center, it's your turn. Hi, Harriet.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have about a dozen 3x3 inch pieces of glass that have imprinted on them, it appears, like various advertising. And what we'd like to know is what they are called so that we can, you know, do some research on them and see what their worth is. But we don't really even know what they are.
Well, I'm not sure what one would call them at this point either without seeing them. I'm not sure. If they're 3x3 inch squares of glass, are they clear glass?
Yeah, it's clear glass, and that most of the pictures are of like Model Ts or some automotive things.
Okay. Well, I would research that in just the automotive, you know, automobilia category. They probably were in some kind of an advertising piece. Maybe it was just like a window that was used in a showroom that was backlit with all these in, or a lamp or something, and these are what survived from that piece. I don't think they have a specific category or name for glass pieces. Are they? Do you know if the design is painted on or printed?
It looks like it's painted on, and they're each in their own little separate box.
Oh, they are in a separate box.
It almost seemed to me like they were some kind of a part of a printing process.
Yeah, they could be.
That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure what to tell you about that off the top.
You might have stumped...
Stumped the appraiser, huh? Yeah.
Sorry, I don't even know where you'd begin to look.
Well, like I say, start looking at automotive collectibles and see if you can come up with that. And, you know, you might start looking at printing if you think it had something to do with printing, and see if you can find something similar in a different category.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of extrapolate when you find out what the topic is of this.
That makes sense. Harriet, good luck. Thank you for calling. And Roz and Cornell, your turn. Roz.
Right.
Okay.
Yep. I have a friend whose father passed away this past year, and he had a bowler hat that she thinks her aunt had made at a millinery in Wisconsin. And I tried to track it down, and I had an impossible time of locating anything about it. It was made either in the Oshkosh area or in the Milwaukee area.
Okay.
And it is a numbered hat.
Mm-hmm.
So, Any marks on it?
Yeah.
Pardon?
Are there any marks on it?
Yes, there were. There was like I can't remember because it's been a while since I did the research on it, but there was it indicated who, you know, the maker of the hat. And like I said, it did have an authorizing number.
And you're trying to find out what the company.
The company or anything more. When I try and research it on the line, it apparently is older than what there's any information that I can get about it.
You know what I would do if that were coming to me? I would go to the Historical Society in those two towns.
I did, and they never responded.
Give them a phone call.
Okay, do you have a number?
No, actually I don't. Okay. You'd have to go to, you know, the Oshkosh and Milwaukee, go to the city directories and find their phone numbers and call and ask them, tell them that you're trying to find out if there were milliners in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
And they should have directories of some of the businesses that used to be in their communities.
Yeah, I would think. Excuse me.
Well, it was a real quandary because I, you know, I tried to do this online and I just ran out of, things that I didn't know where else to look.
Yeah, I think sometimes the volunteers get, you know, the email and then it gets dropped. But if you give them a call and you talk to somebody, especially in Milwaukee, I know they have staff there and there. I think that you can talk to.
Good luck. Thank you, Roz, for calling. Sharon in Madison's up next. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Great. I have a doll that belonged to my deceased mother-in-law, and we think it's probably from the late 40s. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a place where we might take this doll and find out more about it or have it appraised.
Mm-hmm. The first thing I would suggest that you do is take a close look at the doll.
Okay.
And look underneath her hairline in the back of her neck.
Okay.
If she's marked, that's where she'll be marked.
Okay.
Pretty likely. The other possibility is at just the waistline and back.
Okay.
In her back. And you'll see there if there are any marks on her.
No, there aren't.
Okay.
She has a cloth. Body.
Cloth body. Right at the hairline, though. Is that a cloth body, too? Is it the head cloth, too?
No, the head is, some kind of plastic, I think. I'm looking under the hairline, and I don't see anything.
Okay. My guess is that you have one of many, many dolls that was made in the 1940s. If it is not a signed doll, that you can't find any markings, that it was either made by a famous manufacturer or as a character. For example, one of the dolls I sold was called Amos Andra, and she was supposed to be the daughter of Amos and Ruby from the Amos and Andy show.
Oh.
So that's a character doll, and that was marked
okay.
on her.
Okay.
Those would be the ones from that era that would probably carry most value.
Okay.
And in general, the value of a doll, most of its value is in its head.
Okay.
So if the head is in really good condition, that helps a lot. If there are cracks in the head, somebody got the scissors and cut on the wig and really messed it up, those kinds of things. The eyes aren't opening and closing anymore. That all really affects the value. Generally speaking, you know, I can't be sure without seeing the doll, but my guess is because it's not a signed doll and it's maybe the 40s or so, that it isn't an extremely valuable doll.
Okay. Right. Its eyes do open and close, and the hair is just sculpted in as part of the head.
Okay.
And the unusual thing is it has teeth.
Yes, some dolls do have teeth. Open. You know, it all affects the value if a doll has an open mouth and a closed mouth and if it shows teeth or not. So the closed mouth is most unusual. Then there's the open mouth, and then, you know, open mouth with teeth is also kind of falls in between there.
Okay.
So we do see them.
Thank you very much, Sharon. Lloyd and Rhinelander, your turn. Hi, Lloyd.
Hi. One quick question. If a person has an auction, could you put a reserve on some items? Will an auctioneer allow that in some cases? Because there's some items, if you wanted to, if you couldn't get what you felt they were worth.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That depends on the auctioneer, and you'll have to talk with an auctioneer. But most auctioneers will allow that on a few items, and it certainly makes sense that people don't want to, for example, just give away an automobile or something of a high dollar value. And very often when we auction real estate, we put minimums on them as well. But you need to talk specifically to the auctioneer. And what often happens is that the auctioneer will put a little bit of a fee on those items that you put a reserve on, because they've already taken the time to look at those items, research the items, advertise them for you, and then you're going to hold them back. So maybe you say it's an automobile and you're saying, I need $5,000 for this car, and what if you get $4,800 or $4,900? So the auctioneer has done all that work to get that close, and you're saying, nope, can't do it. So they do need to be compensated a little bit for that. So talk, you know, to the auctioneer and find out what their particular policy is.
And Shirley, you have a couple of websites, don't you?
I do. You've talked about my Bauman Auction website, but there's also one called heirloomappraisal.com. And those who are interested in appraisal might go in there. I have some information about what you would expect from an appraisal and questions to ask. And I've got a page on there about if you'd like to host an event, how you do that. You know, a lot of people have me out for appraisal fairs, and they offer those some as community events and some as fundraisers for organizations.
So heirloomappraisal.com. Thanks, Shirley. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
Shirley Bauman, auctioneer and certified appraiser, our guest. And thanks for listening on the Ideas Net.